22. Dilemmas. In the dream, the fool stood by my bed. He looked down at me and shook his head.
Why cannot I speak clearly? Because you make it all a muddle. I see a crossroads through the fog, and who always stands within it? You. Do you think I keep you alive because I am so entranced with you? No. It is because you create so many possibilities. While you live, you give us more choices. The more choices, the more chances to steer for calmer water. So it is not for your benefit, but for the 6 duchies that I preserve your life, and your duty is the same. To live, so that you may continue to present possibilities.
I awoke in precisely the same quandary I had gone to sleep in. I had no idea of what I was going to do. I lay in my bed, listening to the random sounds of the palace awaking. I needed to talk to Chade. That was not possible. So I lightly closed my eyes and tried to think as he had taught me.
What do you know?
He would have asked me, and
what do you suspect?
So, Regal had lied to King Shrewd about Rurisk's health and his attitude toward the 6 duchies. Or possibly, King Shrewd had lied to me about what Regal had said. Or Rurisk had lied about his inclinations toward us. I pondered a moment and decided to follow my first assumption. Shrewd had never lied to me, that I knew, and Rurisk could have simply let me die instead of rushing to my room. So, Regal wanted Rurisk dead. Or did he? If he wanted Rurisk dead, why did he betray me to Ketriken? Unless she had lied about that, I considered. Not likely. She might wonder if Shrewd would send an assassin, but why would she immediately decide to accuse me? No. She had recognized my name and known of Lady Time. So. And Regal had said twice last night that he had asked his father to send Lady Time, but he had likewise betrayed her name to Ketriken. Who did Regal really want dead? Prince Rurisk? Or Lady Time or me after an assassination attempt was discovered? And how did any of it benefit him and this marriage he had engineered? And why was he insisting I kill Rurisk when all the political advantages were to his living? I needed to talk to Chade. I couldn't. I had to somehow decide this myself. Unless. Servants again brought water and fruit. I arose and dressed in my annoying clothes and ate and left my chambers. This day was much the same as yesterday. The holiday atmosphere was beginning to wear on me. I attempted to employ my time to advantage, enlarging my knowledge of the palace, its routines and layout. I found Eod's, Ketriken's, and Rurisk's chambers. I also carefully studied the staircase and support structures to Regal's. I discovered that Cobb slept in the stables, as did Burridge. I expected that of Burridge he would not surrender the care of Buckkeep horses until he left Jampe. But why was Cobb sleeping there? To impress Burridge or to watch him? Severins and Raud both slept in the antechamber of Regal's apartments, despite a plentitude of rooms in the palace. I tried to study the distributions and schedules of the guards and sentries, but couldn't find any. And all the while, I watched for August. It took me the better part of the morning before I could find him in quiet circumstance. "I need to talk to you privately," I told him. He looked annoyed and glanced about to see if anyone were watching us.
"Not here, Fitz. Maybe when we get back to Buckkeep. I've official duties and..."
I had been prepared for that. I opened my hand to show him the pin the king had given me so many years ago. "Do you see this?" I had it from King Shrewd a long time ago, and with it his promise that if I ever needed to speak to him, I need only show it, and I would be admitted to his chambers.
How touching, August observed cynically. And had you some reason for telling me this story, to impress me with your importance, perhaps?
I need to speak to the king. Now.
He isn't here,
August pointed out. He turned to walk away. I took hold of his arm, turned him back to me. You can skill to him. He shook me off angrily, and glanced about us again.
I most certainly cannot, and would not if I could. Do you think every man who can skill is allowed to interrupt the king?
I have shown you the pin. I promise you he would not regard this as an interruption.
I cannot.
Verity, then.
I do not skill to Verity until he skills to me first. Bastard, you don't understand. You took the training and you failed at it, and you really have not the slightest comprehension of what the skill is about. It is not like hallooing to a friend across a valley. It is a serious thing, not to be used except for serious purposes.
Again he turned away from me. Turn back, August, or regret it long. I put every ounce of menace I could into my voice. It was an empty threat. I had no real way to make him regret it, other than threatening to tattle to the king.
Shrewd will not be pleased that you ignored his token.
August turned slowly back. He glared at me.
Well,
I will do this thing then, but you must promise to take all blame for it.
I will.
Will you come to my chambers then, and skill for me now?
Is there no other place?
Your chambers? I suggested.
No, that is even worse. Do not take it amiss, bastard, but I do not wish to seem to associate with you.
Take it not amiss, lordling, that I feel the same about you. In the end, on a stone bench in a quiet part of Ketrickan's herb garden, August sat down and closed his eyes.
What message am I to skill to Shrewd?
I considered. This would be a game of riddles if I were to keep August unaware of my true problem. Tell him Prince Ruarisk's health is excellent, and we may all hope to see him live to old age. Regal still wishes to give him the gift, but I do not think it appropriate. August opened his eyes.
The skill is an important...
I know. Tell him. So August sat and took several breaths, and closed his eyes. After a few moments, he opened his eyes.
He says to listen to Regal.
That's all?
He was busy and very irritated. Now leave me alone. I fear you've made me a fool before my king.
There were a dozen witty replies I could have made to that, but I let him walk away. I wondered if he had skilled to King Shrewd at all. I sat down on the stone bench and reflected that I had gained nothing at all and wasted much time. The temptation came, and I tried it. I closed my own eyes, breathed, focused, opened myself. Shrewd,
my king,
nothing, no reply. I doubt that I skilled at all. I rose and went back into the palace. Again, that day at noon, Ketrickan ascended the dais alone. Her words today were just as simple as she announced that she was binding herself to the people of the six duchies. From this moment hence, she was their sacrifice in all things, for any reason that they commanded it of her. And then she thanked her own people, blood of her blood, who had raised her and treated her well, and reminded them she did not change her allegiance out of any lack of affection for them, but only in the hopes that it would benefit both peoples. Again the silence held as she descended the steps. Tomorrow would be her day to pledge herself to Verity, as a woman to a man. From what I understood, Regal and August would stand beside her tomorrow in Verity's stead, and August would skill so that Verity might see his bride, make her pledge to him. The day dragged on for me. Chongqui came and took me to visit the Blue Fountains. I did my best to be interested and pleasant. We returned to the palace for more minstrels and feasting, and that evening's display of arts by the mountain people. Jugglers and acrobats performed, and dogs did tricks, and swordsmen displayed their prowess in stage bouts. Blue smoke was very much in evidence, and many were indulging, swinging their tiny censers before them as they milled about and talked to one another. I understood that for them it was like a carrot seed cake, a holiday indulgence, but I avoided the trailing smoke of the burn pots. I had to keep a clear head. Chade had supplied me with a potion to clear the head of wine fumes, but I had and knew of none for smoke, and I was unused to smoke. I found a clearer corner and stood apparently enraptured by a minstrel's song, but watching Regal over his shoulder. Regal sat at a table flanked by two brass burners. A very reserved August sat a slight ways from him. From time to time they spoke, August seriously, the prince dismissively. I was not close enough to hear the words, but I saw my name and skill from August's lips. I saw Ketrickin approach Regal and noted that she avoided being in the direct draught of the smoke. Regal spoke long to her, smiling and languid, and reached once to tap her hand and the silver rings she wore. He seemed to be one of those that the smoke made talkative and boastful. She seemed to teeter like a bird on a branch, now drawing closer to him and smiling, now drawing back and becoming more formal. Then Rorisk came to stand behind his sister. He spoke to Regal briefly and then took Ketrickin's arm and drew her away. Severins appeared and replenished Regal's burners. Regal gave a foolish smile of thanks and said something, indicating the whole hall with a wave of his hand. Severins laughed and left. Shortly afterward, Cobb and Raud arrived to speak to Regal. August rose and stalked indignantly off. Regal glared and sent Cobb to fetch him back. August came, but not graciously. Regal rebuked, and August glowered, then lowered his eyes and conceded. I wished desperately that I were close enough to hear what was said. Something, I felt, was definitely afoot. It might be nothing to do with me and my task, but somehow I doubted it. I went over my meager store of facts, feeling sure I was missing the significance of something, but I also wondered if I was not deceiving myself. Perhaps I was overreacting to everything. Perhaps the safest course was simply to do as Regal told me and let him accept the responsibility. Perhaps I should save time and cut my own throat. I could, of course, go directly to Rorisk, tell him that despite my best efforts, Regal still wanted him dead, and beg asylum of him. After all, who would not find attractive a trained assassin who had already turned on one master? I could tell Regal I was going to kill Rorisk and then simply not do it. I thought carefully about that. I could tell Regal I was going to kill Rorisk and then kill Regal instead. The smoke, I told myself, only the smoke made that sound so wise. I could go to Burridge and tell him I was really an assassin and ask his advice about my situation. I could take the princess's mare and ride off into the mountains.
So, are you enjoying yourself?
Zhongqi asked as she came up and took my arm. I realized I was staring at a man juggling knives and torches. I shall long remember this experience, I told her, and then suggested a stroll through the cool of the gardens. I knew the smoke was affecting me. Late that night, I reported to Regal's chamber. Raud admitted me this time, smiling pleasantly.
Good evening, he greeted me,
and I walked in as if into a wolverine's den. But the air within the chamber was blue with smoke, and this seemed the source of Raud's cheerfulness. Regal kept me waiting again, and though I tucked my chin to my chest and breathed shallowly, I knew the smoke was affecting me.
Control,
I reminded myself, and tried not to feel the giddiness. I shifted in my seat several times and finally resorted to openly covering my mouth and nose with a hand. It had small effect on screening the smoke. I looked up as the screen to the inner chamber slid aside, but it was only Severin's. He glanced at Raud, then came to sit beside me. After a moment of his silence, I asked, "Will Regal see me now?" Severin shook his head.
"He is with a companion, but he has trusted me with all you need to know."
He opened his hand on the bench between us to show me a tiny white pouch.
"He has obtained this for you. He trusts you will approve. A little of this, mixed with wine, will cause death, but not soon. There will not even be symptoms of death for several weeks, and then it comes as a lethargy that gradually increases. The man does not suffer," he added, as if this were my primary concern.
I racked my brains. Is this Kex gum? I had heard of such a poison, but never seen it. If Regal had a source, Chade would want to know.
"I do not know its name, nor does it matter. Only this. Prince Regal says you will have a use for it tonight.
You will make an opportunity. What does he expect of me? That I will go to his chambers, knock, and enter with poisoned wine for him? Isn't that a bit obvious?"
"Done that way, of course it is. But surely your training has given you more finesse than that."
"My training tells me that things like this are not discussed with a valet. I must hear this from Regal, or I do not act." Severin's sighed. "Yet my master foresaw this. This is his message. By the pin you carry and the crest on your breast, he commands this. Refuse it, and you refuse your king. You will be committing treason, and he will see you hang for it. But I..."
"Take it and go. The longer you wait, the later it is, and the more contrived will seem your visit to his chambers."
Severin's rose abruptly and left me. Raud sat like a toad in the corner, eyeing me and smiling. I would have to kill both of them before we returned to Buckkeep if I were to preserve my usefulness as an assassin. I wondered if they knew that. I smiled back at Raud, tasting smoke in the back of my throat. I took my poison and left. Once at the base of Regal's staircase, I retreated to the wall where it was most shadowed and clambered as swiftly as I could up one of the supports of Regal's chamber. Clinging like a cat, I snugged myself up to the supports of the chamber floor and waited. And waited. Until between the smoke whirling in my head and my own weariness and the lingering effects of Ketrikan's herbs, I wondered if I were dreaming all of it. I wondered if my clumsy trap would yield me nothing. I considered, finally, that Regal had told me he had specifically requested Lady Time, but Shrewd had sent me instead. I recalled how Chade had puzzled over that, and finally I recalled his words to me. Had my king given me up to Regal, and if he had, what did I owe to any of them? Eventually, I saw Raud depart and, after what seemed a very long time, return with Cobb. I could hear little through the floor, but enough to know Regal's voice. My evening plans were being divulged to Cobb. When I was certain of it, I wriggled out of my hiding place, clambered down, and retreated to my own room. There I made certain of some specialized supplies. I reminded myself firmly that I was a king's man. I had told Verity so. I left my chamber and walked softly through the palace. In the great hall, the common folk slept on mats on the floor in concentric circles around the dais to have reserved the best viewing of their princess's pledging tomorrow. I walked among them, and they did not stir. So much trust, so ill placed. The chambers of the royals were at the extreme rear of the palace, farthest from the main entry. There were no guards. I walked past the door that led to the bedroom of the reclusive king, past Rurisk's door, and to Ketrikan's. Her door was decorated with hummingbirds and honeysuckle. I thought how much the fool would have liked it. I tapped lightly and waited. Slow moments passed. I tapped again. I heard the scruff of bare feet on wood, and the painted screen slid open. Ketrickin's hair had been freshly braided, but fine strands had already pulled free around her face. Her long white nightrobe accented her fairness so that she seemed pale as the fool.
"Do you need something?"
she asked sleepily.
"Only the answer to a question."
The smoke still twined through my thoughts. I wanted to smile to be witty and clever before her. Pale beauty, I thought. I pushed the impulse aside. She was waiting.
"If I killed your brother tonight," I said carefully, "what would you do?"
She did not even draw back from me.
"I would kill you, of course. At least I would demand it done in justice. As I am pledged to your family now, I could not take your blood myself."
"But would you go on with the wedding? Would you still marry Verity?
Would you like to come in?"
"I haven't time." "Would you marry Verity?"
"I am pledged to the six duchies to be their queen. I am pledged to their people. Tomorrow I pledge to the king in waiting, not to a man named Verity. But even were it otherwise, ask yourself, which is the most binding? I am bound already. It is not just my work, but my father's and my brother's. I would not want to marry a man who had ordered my brother's death. But it is not the man I am pledged to. It is the six duchies. I am given there in the hopes of it benefiting my people. There I must go."
I nodded.
"Thank you, my lady. Forgive my disturbing your rest. Where do you go now?"
"To your brother." She remained standing in her door as I turned and walked to her brother's chamber. I tapped and waited. Rurisk must have been restive, for he opened the door much more quickly.
"May I come in?"
"Certainly."
Gracious, as I had expected. The edge of a giggle teased at my resolve. "Chade would not be proud of you just now," I counseled myself, and refused to smile. I entered, and he closed the door behind me.
"Shall we have wine?"
I asked him.
"If you wish it,"
he said, puzzled but polite. I seated myself on a chair while he unstopped a carafe and poured for us. There was a censer on his table too, still warm. I had not seen him indulge earlier. He probably had thought it more safe to wait until he was alone in his chamber. But you never can tell when an assassin will come calling with a pocketful of death. I pushed down a silly smile. He filled two glasses. I leaned forward and showed him my twist of paper. Painstakingly, I tipped it into his wine, picked up the glass, and swirled it to see it well dissolved. I handed it to him.
"I've come to poison you, you see. You die. Then Ketrickin kills me. Then she marries Verity."
I lifted my glass and sipped from it. Apple wine from Pharaoh, I guessed. Probably part of the wedding gifts.
"So what does Regal gain?"
Rurisk eyed his wine with distaste and set it aside. He took my glass from my hand. He drank from it. There was no shock in his voice as he said,
"He's rid of you. I gather he does not value your company. He has been very gracious to me, extending many gifts to me, as well as to my kingdom. But if I were dead, Ketrickin would be left sole heir to the Mountain Kingdom. That would benefit the six duchies, would it not? We cannot protect the land we already have. And I think Regal would see it as benefiting Verity, not the kingdom." I heard a noise outside the door. "That will be Cobb, coming to catch me in the act of poisoning you," I surmised. I rose, went to the door, and opened it. Ketrickin pushed past me into the room. I closed the screen quickly behind her.
"He's come to poison you," she warned Rurisk.
"I know," he said gravely. "He put it in my wine. That's why I'm drinking his."
He refilled the glass from the carafe and offered it to her.
It's apple, he cajoled, when she shook her head.
I don't see any humor in this, she snapped, and Rurisk and I looked at one another and grinned foolishly.
Smoke.
Her brother sighed benignly.
It's like this. Fitz Chivalry realized tonight he's a dead man. Too many people have been told he is an assassin. If he kills me, you kill him. If he doesn't kill me, how can he go home and face his king? Even if his king forgives him, half the court will know he's an assassin. That makes him useless. Useless bastards are a liability to royalty.
Rurisk finished his lecture by draining the rest of his glass.
Ketrickan told me that even if I killed you tonight, she would still pledge to Verity tomorrow. Again, he was not surprised.
What would she gain by refusing? Only the enmity of the six duchies.
She would be forsworn to your people, a great shame to our people. She would become outcast, to the good of no one.
It would not bring me back.
And would not your people rise up at the thought of giving her to such a man?
We would protect them from such knowledge. Eod and my sister would, anyway. Shall a whole kingdom rise to war over the death of one man? Remember, I am sacrifice here.
For the first time, I dimly understood what that meant. I may very soon be an embarrassment to you, I warned him. I was told it was a slow poison, but I looked at it. It is not. It is a simple extract of dead root, and actually rather swift, if given in sufficient quantity. First, it gives a man tremors. Rurisk extended his hands on the table, and they trembled. Ketrickan looked furious with both of us. Death follows swiftly, and I expect I am supposed to be caught in the act and disposed of along with you. Rurisk clutched his throat, then let his head loll forward on his chest.
I am poisoned, he intoned theatrically.
I've had enough of this, Ketrick spat, just as Cobb tore the door open. Where treachery? He cried. He went white at the sight of Ketrickan. My lady princess, tell me you have not drunk the wine. This tedious bastard has poisoned it. I think the drama was rather spoiled by the lack of response. Ketrickan and I exchanged looks. Rurisk rolled from his chair onto the floor. Oh, stop it! She hissed at him.
I put the poison in the wine, I told Cobb genially, just as I was charged to do. And then Rurisk's back arched in his first convulsion. The blinding realization of how I had been duped took but an instant. Poison in the wine, a gift of Faro apple wine, probably given this very evening. Regal had not trusted me to put it there, but it was easy enough to accomplish in this trusting place. I watched Rurich arch again, knowing there was nothing I could do. Already, there was the spreading numbness in my own mouth. I wondered, almost idly, how strong the dose had been. I had only a cup. Would I die here, or on a scaffold?
Ketrickan herself understood, a moment later, that her brother was truly dying.
You soulless filth!
She spat at me, and then sank down at Rurisk's side.
To lull him with jests and smoke, to smile with him as he dies!
Her eyes flashed at Cobb.
I demand his death! Tell Regal to come here now!
I was moving for the door, but Cobb was faster.
Of course. No smoke for Cobb this night. He was faster and more muscular than I, clearer of head. His arms closed around me, and he bore me down to the floor. His face was close to mine as he drove his fist into my belly. I knew this breath, this scent of sweat. Smithy had scented this before he died, but this time the knife was in my sleeve and very sharp and treated with the swiftest poison Chade knew. After I put it into him, he managed to hit me twice. Good solid punches, before he fell back, dying. Goodbye, Cobb. As he fell, I suddenly saw a freckly stable boy saying, Come along now, there's some good fellows. It could have gone so many different ways. I had known this man. Killing him
killed a part of my own life. Burridge was going to be very upset with me. All those thoughts had taken but a fraction of a second. Cobb's outflung hand had not struck the floor before I was moving for the door. Ketrickin was even faster. I think it was a brass water ewer. I saw it as a white burst of light. When I came to myself, everything hurt. The most immediate pain was in my wrists, for the cords that knotted them together behind my back were unbearably tight. I was being carried, sort of. Neither Raud nor Severin seemed to much care if parts of me dragged. Regal was there, with a torch, and a Chiorda I didn't know leading the way with another. I didn't know where I was either, except that we were outdoors.
"Is there nowhere else we can put him? No place especially secure?"
Regal was demanding. There was a muttered reply, and Regal said,
"No, you're right. We do not want to raise a great outcry right now. Tomorrow is soon enough. Not that I think he will live that long."
A door was opened, and I was flung headlong to an earthen floor barely cushioned by straw. I breathed, dust and chaff. I could not cough. Regal gestured with his torch.
"Go to the princess," he instructed Severance.
"Tell her I will be there shortly. See if there is anything we can do to make the prince more comfortable. You, Raud, summon August from his chambers. We will need his skill so that King Shrewd may know how he has succored a scorpion. I will need his approval before the bastard dies. If he lives long enough to be condemned, go on now."
"Go!"
And they left, the Chiorda lighting their way for them. Regal remained, looking down on me. He waited until their footfalls were distant, before he kicked me savagely in the ribs. I cried out wordlessly, for my mouth and throat were numb.
"It seems we have been here before, have we not?
You wallowing in straw and me looking down on you, wondering what misfortune had brought you into my life. Odd how so many things end as they begin. And so much of justice is a circle also. Consider how you fall to poison and treachery, just as my mother did. Ah, you start. Did you think I did not know? I knew. I know much you do not think I know. Everything from the stench of Lady Time to how you lost your skill when Burridge would no longer let you tap his strength. He was swift enough to abandon you when he saw it might otherwise cost him his life."
A tremor shook me. Regal threw back his head and laughed. Then he gave a sigh and turned.
"A pity I cannot stay and watch. But I have a princess to console. Poor thing. Pledged to a man she already hates."
Either Regal left then, or I did, I am not clear. It was as if the sky opened up, and I flowed out into it.
"Being open," Verity told me, "is simply not being closed."
Then I dreamed, I think, of the fool, and of Verity, sleeping with his arms wrapped around his head, as if to keep his thoughts in, and of Galen's voice echoing in the dark, cold chamber.
"Tomorrow is better. When he skills now, he scarce has any sense of the room he sits in. We do not have enough bond for me to do this from a distance. A touch will be required."
There was a squeaking in the dark, a disagreeable mouse of a mind that I did not know.
"Do it now,"
it insisted.
"Do not be foolish," Galen rebuked it. "Shall we lose it all now for the sake of haste? Tomorrow is soon enough. Let me worry about that part. You must tidy things there. Raud and Severins know too much, and the stable master has annoyed us too long."
"You leave me standing in a bloodbath,"
the mouse squeaked angrily.
"Wade through it to a throne,"
Galen suggested.
"And Cobb is dead. Who will see to my horses on the way home?"
"Leave the stable master then,"
Galen said in disgust, and then, considering, "I will do him myself when you get home. I shall not mind. But the others were better done quickly.
Perhaps the bastard poisoned other wine in your quarters. A pity your servants got into it.
I suppose. You must find me a new valet.
We will have your wife do that for you. You should be with her now. She has just lost her brother. You must be horrified at what has come to pass. Try to blame the bastard rather than Verity, but not too convincingly. And tomorrow, when you are as bereaved as she, well, we shall see what mutual sympathy leads to. She is as big as a cow and as pale as a fish. But with the mountain lands, you will have a defensible inland kingdom. You know the coastal duchies will not stand for you, and Pharaoh and Tilth cannot stand alone between the mountains and the coastal duchies. Besides, she need not live longer than her first child's birth.
Fitz chivalry farseer,
Verity said in his sleep. King Shrewd and Chade played at dice bones together. Patience stirred in her sleep.
Chivalry?
She asked softly.
Is that you?
No, I said. It's no one. No one at all. She nodded and slept on. When my eyes focused again, it was dark, and I was alone. My jaws trembled, and my chin and shirt front were wet with my own saliva. The numbness seemed less. I wondered if that meant the poison wouldn't kill me. I doubted that it mattered. I would have small chance to speak in my own behalf. My hands had gone numb. At least they didn't hurt anymore. I was horribly thirsty. I wondered if Rurisk was dead yet. He had taken a lot more of the wine than I had, and Chade had said it was quick. As if in answer to my question, a cry of purest pain rose to the moon. The ululation seemed to hang there, and to pull my heart out with it as it rose. Nosey's master was dead. I flung myself toward him, wrapped the wit around him, I know, and we shivered together, as one he had loved passed beyond reach. The great aloneness wrapped us together.
Boy?
Faint but true, a paw and a nose, and a door edged open. He padded toward me, his nose telling me how bad I smelled. Smoke and blood and fear sweat. When he reached me, he lay down beside me and put his head on my back. With the touch came the bond again, stronger now that Rurisk was gone.
He left me. It hurts.
I know. A long time passed.
Free me?
The old dog lifted his head. Men cannot grieve as dogs do. We should be grateful for that. But from the depths of his anguish he still rose and set worn teeth to my bonds. I felt them loosen, a strand at a time, but had not even the strength to pull them apart. Nosey turned his head to set his back teeth to them. At last, the thongs parted. I pulled my arms forward. That made everything hurt differently. I still could not feel my hands, but I could roll over and get my face out of the straw. Nosey and I sighed together. He put his head on my chest, and I wrapped a stiff arm around him. Another tremor shook me. My muscles clenched and unclenched themselves so violently that I saw dots of light. But it passed, and I still breathed. I opened my eyes again. Light blinded me, but I did not know if it was real. Beside me, Nosey's tail thumped the straw. Burridge slowly sank down beside us. He put a gentle hand on Nosey's back as my eyes adjusted to his lantern. I could see the grief in his face.
"Are you dying?"
he asked me. His voice was so neutral, it was like hearing a stone speak.
"I'm not sure."
That was what I tried to say. My mouth still wasn't working very well. He rose and walked away. He took the lantern with him. I lay alone in the dark. Then the light came back, and Burridge with a bucket of water. He lifted my head and sloshed some into my mouth.
Don't swallow it,
he cautioned me. But I couldn't have made those muscles work anyway. He washed out my mouth twice more, and then half drowned me, trying to get me to drink some. I fended off the bucket with a wooden hand.
No,
I managed. After a bit, my head seemed to clear. I moved my tongue against my teeth and could feel them.
I killed Cobb,
I told him.
I know. They brought his body out to the stables. No one wanted to tell me anything.
How did you know to find me? He sighed.
I just had a feeling.
You heard Nosy?
Yes. The howling.
That isn't what I meant. He was quiet a long time.
Sensing a thing isn't the same as using a thing.
I couldn't think of anything to say back to that. After a while, I said,
Cobb is the one who knifed you on the stairs. Was he?
Burridge considered.
I had wondered why the dogs barked so little. They knew him. Only Smithy reacted.
My hands screamed suddenly to life. I folded them to my chest and rocked over them. Nosy whined.
Stop it, Burridge hissed.
Just now I can't help it, I replied. It all hurts so bad, I'm spilling out all over. Burridge was silent.
Are you going to help me?
I asked finally.
I don't know,
he said softly, and then, almost pleadingly,
Fitz, what are you? What have you become?
I am what you are, I told him honestly. A king's man. Burridge, they're going to kill Verity. If they do, Regal will become king.
What are you talking about?
If we stay here while I explain it all, it will happen. Help me get out of here. He seemed to take a very long time to think about it, but in the end, he helped me to stand, and I held on to his sleeve as I staggered out of the stables and into the night.